reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need.
Hi, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media platform at Golf News Net. We are presented by BetDSI.com, and we use their odds each and every week on every major tour, including for next week's U.S. Open, which we are getting very excited about. We love using their data because you can see in real time how the money is moving and the effect that that money movement has on the odds. So even if you're in a jurisdiction where you cannot legally bet on sports online, you can still use that data for your fantasy picks and especially for your major pools, like for the U.S. Open next week. You can see where the money's moving, see where the smart money's moving, and see who might be able to help your lineups out as you try to win either your pool or your million in DraftKings or whatever it is you're looking for, even pride among your friends. So check out BetDSI.com. Okay, so this week's first podcast, hopefully we'll have two this week. We're planning on having another one later on the week with another guest, but we won't spoil that surprise because in case it doesn't happen, I don't want to ruin it, and then we can find another guest, and it sounds like I planned it all along. But Landon Gentry joins us, and he is the number 9 ranked long driver in the world. And many of you may know, if you follow me on Twitter personally, there are a lot of diverse interests that I have other than watching professional tournament golf. Professional wrestling may be one of them. So is long drive. I love watching long drive. And I'll tell you why I love watching long drive. Because it is a scientific exertion of power. And what I mean by that is, you watch these guys on TV, and really, until Golf Channel got involved and bought the Long Drivers of America and created this, where they've created this series of television opportunities for long drivers, men and women, which has been awesome, to be able to get on TV. And their first installment of the season is Tuesday at 7, or 7 is kind of pre-game, 8 Eastern, where they're going to have a battle in Mesquite, basically, where they used to have the World Long Drive Championship. Now they have it in Oklahoma, but the Mesquite kind of complex that they built, the city of Mesquite, Nevada, built this for them, along with some soccer fields, but built this for them, purpose-built for long driving. And so to have these opportunities has been really cool, and I love watching them because they exert power, and you see that on TV. You see the ball go 400, 410, 425 yards. You go, wow, man, they're just swinging so hard. That's really all they're doing. But in reality, there is a lot more going on in that golf swing of a long driver than you might think. And on top of that, hitting a 60-yard grid might seem really simple to you and me because we play regular golf. We can hit a 25-yard fairway. But for them, hitting it as far as they do, their margin for error is so infinitesimally small that it's really hard for the average golfer to understand it. So when the folks at Golf Channel reached out and said, hey, we've got this event coming up, do you want to talk about it? And I was like, yes, please. Who do we talk to? And we know a number of the long drivers. We know their name recognition. This is my first time talking to Landon. He actually won a shootout that they had at the Windstar Resort in Oklahoma, which will host the World Long Drive Championship later on in the year. So on the same grid, basically, where he's going to compete for Worlds, Landon won. So we talked earlier today. Really, it was supposed to be like a 20-minute chat. Turned out to be a nearly 30-minute chat about long drive, about him, about how he got involved in the sport. As you'll hear me mention, I always find the origin story of how guys get into long drive fascinating. And then kind of go into details about what these guys do to prepare, how they compete, how it's different than golf, and hopefully give you a good primer for what you might see if you tune in to Golf Channel tomorrow night on Tuesday night. So we're doing this on Monday. And hopefully you get to catch us today, Monday, or Tuesday before it goes on the air, and you get to check it out and enjoy it. So enjoy the chat with Landon, and then we'll come back at the end.
Landon, thanks for being on with us. Just for background for folks, you are the number 9 ranked long driver in the world by the World Long Drivers, and you just won the Windstar Midwest Slam a couple weeks ago. And I want to start there with the Midwest Slam, not only because you won, but because this is part of a schedule that is really taking shape for the World Long Drive, and it's leading to the World Championship, and it's leading to additional television exposure for you guys, which happens tomorrow night in Mesquite, Nevada, kind of almost kind of like the Cooperstown of long drive. So for you guys who are in the sport and trying to grow the sport, what does it mean to have this additional television exposure on Golf Channel and to be able to show your skills on national television?
It means a lot. I mean, number one, we're back in Mesquite. It's probably the best grid that we hit on throughout the year. The people of Mesquite, Nevada are a great host. You know, the Mesquite Sports and Events Complex does a great job. The volunteers do a great job. But, you know, being back here where, you know, so many guys, you know, started their careers and did world finals here and things of that nature is absolutely, you know, awesome. And the, you know, getting the TV time is a tremendous help because it gives us an opportunity just to showcase our talents to the world. There's so many guys that, you know, I hear all the time, guys, I hit it 300 yards and yeah, that's a long way. Trust me, that's a very long way. But we have guys that just, you know, have an incredible amount of talent to showcase and being able to do that on television on the Golf Channel on Tuesday is going to be great.
To look at, I'm looking at the match play bracket from the Windstar, and you in the final, your best drive was 403 yards. Can you put that into perspective for people what that's like for you and your peers, a 400-yard drive, as opposed to, you know, when we see Dustin Johnson nail one 400 yards on the PGA Tour, jaws drop. But for you guys, is that kind of something more commonplace?
So one thing that I think people, you know, get misconstrued is conditions. You know, when PGA Tour players are playing golf courses, they're playing on pristine fairways, pristine greens. Things have been cut. They've been rolled. You know, sometimes they shut courses down. I mean, I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. I live 15 minutes from Sawgrass, from TPC Sawgrass. Yeah. And, you know, you can't play Sawgrass 4 months before the players, you know, because they're getting it ready to be in the best conditions possible. So conditions play a huge role in what the numbers are. And the conditions at Windstar that day in Thackerville were, you know, it was a dead right to left wind. I think the longest ball of the day actually was like 407. So being able to hit it 403 in that last round to win was a big ball, you know, for me, for anybody. And honestly, it was my longest ball of the day. I hadn't hit 403 all day. I hadn't touched it, and finally connected and hit a good ball to win.
Can you explain to folks, because you guys are trying to hit into a grid, it's a little bit different, obviously, than golf, and golfers trying to hit a fairway, but if they don't, you know, you still get to hit another shot, it counts. But in long drive, you're trying to hit a 60-yard wide grid, and if you miss it, your drive is as good as zero. So what is your strategy like most times when you're competing, either qualifying or match play, and maybe there's a difference, you can explain that, but trying to hit the grid versus trying to put a huge number on the board, or is it just one and the same?
No, it's different. So I can give you, you know, kind of what I think about and kind of my strategy. You know, we get 8 balls, and so what I'll try to do is I'll try to put the first two or three balls, I'll try to put those balls in the grid and actually, you know, get a number. So you get a number, you get a mark, you know, and then you try to build on that number. And what that kind of does for me in my mindset is, if I see, you know, a 385 ball up there and I know that I've hit that pretty decent, then I can start to really put some speed in the swing, put some, you know, go after it a little bit harder, get those extra 20, 30 yards depending on conditions. So, you know, we have a lot of guys that they hang their hat on one ball because they know if they catch that one ball, their speed's good enough. For me, I kind of have more of a golf background. I played golf in high school and I'd much rather put more balls in the grid, knowing I have a chance of getting a mark out there than, you know, trying to catch one ball out of 8. And to me, that helps. That kind of puts some pressure on some guys, because if you're hitting next to a guy that's struggling to hit the grid, to find the grid, and you got 6 balls in the grid, and they're all a pretty good ways out there, he knows that that puts a little more pressure on guys to hit the grid and hit a good number. And, yeah. And that kind of plays into that mental game to where you can, you know, get on top of them.
So are you playing through a set in trying to escalate, all right, balls 1, 2, and 3 go X amount of yards, let's say 370, 380. And then are you trying to build to a crescendo at the end where the eighth ball is the longest, or kind of like 6, 7, 8, the, like the money balls in a 3-point competition? Like you're trying to make them, but, you know, they don't have to all go.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You kind of have a crescendo at the end. So for me, honestly, I've been doing this for, it's my 13th year doing it. And a lot of people don't know that. They think that I've only been in it for a couple of years, but I've been doing it for a while. It took me a long time to get to where I'm at. And, but I honestly, for me, the first two balls are kind of, I wouldn't say they're throwaway balls, but I'm literally feeling out how the balls are reacting, how the grid's reacting, and then I absolutely, you know, start to unleash on the last six. I kind of get into a groove, and, you know, I'll figure out what to do on those last six to build to that crescendo, like you said, 6, 7, and 8, try to hit the best balls of the set.
And as you get deeper into a tournament where it goes from kind of group stages to match play, and you're playing guy after guy after guy, the deeper that you get, how do you manage your energy reserve to be able to smash it 403 in the final round, as opposed to, and you actually got stronger throughout the tournament, you know, 367 first round, 375 second round, and in the final, you hit it 403. So how do you manage your stamina and your energy to be able to continue to pop higher the longer you go into the tournament?
Honestly, for me, it's kind of a combination of being physically strong and mentally strong. What I tell a lot of guys that get into the sport, and a lot of people that ask me, you know, questions about, you know, what I do and things of that nature, you know, when guys get to this level, and you're talking about the top 32 guys in the world, like the Windstar Slam, or the Midwest Slam, or like the Clash of Mania that we're at right now, I mean, all the guys that are here are physically gifted. And what separates guys that win and separates guys that don't win is being mentally strong. So you have to find that happy medium of being able to maintain your strength throughout the competition and maintain your mental capacity to hit good balls when you need to hit good balls. And it's, you know, the physical ability, you know, I'm in the gym 3 times a week, sometimes 4 times a week, depending on the week. And if I have a competition coming up, then I'm on the range 3 to 4 times a week, just depending on the week, I switch those days off. And so I physically prepare my body to withstand, because this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. You know, people need to understand that when you come to a long drive event, it is an all day thing. So I literally just started at 7 a.m. and I finished at 9. There will be another 16 guys that hit, and then we'll start back at 1 o'clock and we'll be done by 2:33. But I started at 7 this morning. So, you know, you got to be able to withstand the grind. You got to be able to have that stamina and that mental strength, so to speak, to really get through the day to keep it up.
It almost kind of seems kind of like combine workouts, like where you're doing it for a long time. You're in a gym session for a long time, but you're in basically 5-minute sprints, and then you let yourself down. You have another 5 minutes. You come back. You do it again, 5 minutes at a time. Is it akin to that, or are you trying to keep the same energy level whether you're hitting or not throughout the day?
For me personally, I try to keep the intensity up. So I'll make sure that I have food. I'll make sure that I have protein in between sets. Make sure that I keep something, you know, to fuel the body, because it literally drains you. You got to think, you know, to compare it to PGA, you got PGA golfers who go out for 4.5 hours and they have, you know, intense concentration for 4.5 hours, you know, in a round of golf. Whereas long drivers, we have 3 minutes to hit 8 balls. So we have 3 minutes of extreme concentration that we have to be on point for those 3 minutes to hit our best ball. And, you know, it's kind of like you alluded to. You have 5-minute sprints where you're going as hard as you can possibly go, and then you walk off the tee box and you kind of take a breath and, you know, kind of let yourself down. And, you know, you got to, once you're back up for the next set, you got to get that intensity back. You know, so you got to be physically intense and physically strong, and then you got to be mentally strong to be able to get back to that intensity level that you were just at.
And is that the more grueling part, getting yourself back up after stepping off, or is it the 3 minutes that you're on that stage trying to pop 8 balls in that grid as far as you can?
Honestly, I can only speak to myself on this one.
Sure.
For me, I think it's a little. It's harder to get the intensity back up, because when you walk off, let's say that you needed to win a set. You needed to win a set. You needed to keep advancing. Otherwise, you were going to lose and go home, right? So you get yourself up. You get so intense and hype, and then all of a sudden you do it, and you walk off, and you're like, "Oh golly, I did it! Heck yeah, I'm done." But so you kind of let yourself down. You know, you like to breathe a sigh of relief. Well, now you got to go back up and do it again. So you have to psych yourself back up to get back into that high intensity again to do it and repeat that performance you just had to not get eliminated. So that's very tough to do, and I think that's a testament to, you know, being mentally strong and mentally tough that guys do, you know, and guys have.
Is there a tendency, either for you or do you find in other players, maybe have talked about this over time, is there a tendency to kind of harp back on maybe your last or your last two sets where you're thinking about, all right, last time I kind of missed off the face a little bit, just, you know, I mean, you guys are talking millimeters difference between hitting 400 and 410 yards, but is there a tendency to worry about what you last did as opposed to what you're about to do, or are you guys really good about keeping in the zone of this is what I'm doing right now and staying in the present?
I think some guys harp on that, you know, sometimes it's, you know, and if some guys think about, you know, oh man, I just had a bad set, you know, it could really weigh on them. And I think that's a testament, and it goes back to being mentally strong. I mean, I can talk about myself this morning. This morning, the first set, I got smoked by 30 yards. Literally got smoked by 30 yards. I finished dead last. So I could have cried about it. I could have said, hey man, you know, well, you ain't got it today. You don't have the speed. I went back and went to the next two rounds and went win-win in the next few rounds. So it's, you know, you got to be able to pick yourself up and move forward. And, you know, like I said, physically guys are gifted. And again, it's a testament to being mentally tough. You got to get yourself back to that happy place, or that place where you're kind of, it's like tunnel vision is what I call it. You know, you don't hear anything. You don't think about anything. You just go up there and you let your athletic ability take over and you just hit good balls.
All right, I want to get into the origin story a little bit, because every long driver I've ever talked to has a fascinating story about how they got into long drive, how they realized they've got that talent, and then how they started nurturing it to get to where you are now. So can you walk us through that of how you figured, I mean, you obviously have a golf background, you mentioned that, but how did you go from playing golf to realizing maybe I should mash golf balls 400 yards for a living?
Well, yeah, it's actually pretty funny. So I remember the first year I ever watched, it used to be the Remax World Long Drive Championships, you know?
Yeah.
And the first year I ever watched it was the first year that Zubak won in 96, I think, was his first championship before he went 96, 97, 98, 99, that's four in a row. And I remember I used to always go to my dad's side of the family for Christmas Day, and they always showed it on ESPN, and I remember watching it, and my uncle told me one day, he said, you know, one day I'm going to put you in that long drive and make some money off you. Because I was always able to hit it far, you know, playing golf. And I actually quit golf in high school to focus on baseball. And I actually went to college and played baseball, a couple years of baseball in college, and always continued to play golf, just focused on baseball. And then I quit baseball, didn't want to play anymore, just became unfun. I got burnt out. I knew I wasn't going to make it to the next level. So I came home, and me and my buddy were sitting there watching TV one day. And it was a rerun of, like, I think the 2002 or 2003 Remax Finals. And he looked at me, he's like, man, you hit it a long way. Why don't you give it a try? And so I was like, you know, maybe I can do that, you know. And I always could hit it far. I never had any clubs or anything like that. I never tried it. And I went to the World Golf Village. I live in Jacksonville, Florida. So St. Augustine, the World Golf Hall of Fame, they had a PGA Tour stop there. And I went and got fitted for a driver. And I was 21 years old, and my parents bought it, thank God. Otherwise, I don't think I could have afforded the driver. But I went to a local qualifier 2 weeks later, and I hit it 388 and won the local qualifier. and it was kind of like, it was just a bug. At that point, the bug had bitten me. I was, you know, I was hooked, and I never looked back at that point. And that's how I got into it. Then I started doing some more research, looking at forums and finding more guys that did long drive and kind of asking questions and getting more information about it. And then I started full time in 2010. And that's when I started doing the LDA tour events, doing independent events, things of that nature. And, actually finished fifth in 2010 at the World Finals. And then finished third in 2012. So I've had two top eight finishes, and you know, I've been doing this for 13 years, and I'm still like a kid. It's still so fun to me.
Was the community welcoming when you first kind of got into it? Because I mean, obviously, it's not like playing regular golf where there are like 25 million people. You're bound to know somebody who plays golf. Long drive seems like it's a smaller community, so you're probably less likely to know somebody who is in long drive. So how did you break into it, and how were you received?
To be honest, you know, 13 years ago, the dynamic of the sport was a lot different than it is now, I have to be honest. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when I showed up at that qualifier, that first qualifier, I had my roommate, my brother, my parents with me, my dad's golf buddy and his son, and then I had a guy that used to work with me and his family. I had like 13 people with me. So I showed up with an entourage. People were like, who's this guy? So, you know, it wasn't as welcoming. I think guys were a little threatened back when I started. Now the dynamic of the sport has completely changed. It has completely changed. Everybody is trying to help everybody because it is such a tight-knit community. It's such a small family. You know, the only thing I can compare it to is kind of like a brotherhood, a fraternity of some sort. You know, there's everybody here. You'll never see a sport where guys cheer for each other when they're not on the tee box, and they try to kill each other when they are on the tee box. You know, good example is when I won the Midwest Slam, I was hitting against Paul Howell, who's on my team. He's on the One Stop Power Shop team. He's a teammate of mine. He's a Callaway team member of mine, and he understands and he knows. Even though this is his second year in the sport, he knows that there are no friends on the tee box, none whatsoever, because second place was $5,000 and first place was $10,000. So to me, that's a big difference in money. And there's no friends on the tee box. There's no friends whatsoever. And everybody knows that. But as soon as we walk off the tee box, we're going to go hang out and have a good time together and be friends again. But on the tee box, there's no friends whatsoever.
From a technical perspective, coming from golf and then baseball too, what kind of changes did you have to make in your form? To explain to people who maybe play golf and then watch long drive and go, oh, well, there's no way I could do that. Or maybe they think they can do that for some reason. But to explain to people the technical differences between just hitting a golf ball on a golf course and trying to put it in a position kind of in a fairway as opposed to trying to hit it as far as you possibly can and hitting with a slightly larger target.
Right. When people ask me about that, because I get that question a lot, actually, they ask me about it when I, you know, they see me warming up or they see me practicing at, you know, a range in Jacksonville and things like that. And they say, you know, so what I do is I try to map out a grid. And I tell them, you know, if you have a center line of a grid, right, if you're off 5 degrees off center at 300 yards, you're only off center so much, right? But at 400 yards, that angle keeps going. So you're that much further off. So one, you know, for us, we have a small window of margin. I mean, a small window of error to hit a golf ball, and it comes down to clubs. I tell a lot of people that want to try it or want to try to get into it to go get fitted for clubs. You know, go get your swing speed tested. Try different clubs out. It's tough. Find used clubs if you can't afford it. You know, find used clubs to try it out and see if you have what it takes. Because a lot of guys, you know, that have the weekend warrior, that they have a buddy in their group that hits it 310, you know, with a plane driver, and it's like, yeah, that's a long way, and it's a very long way. But out here, it's you'll get chewed up and spit out. So the as far as technical form goes, from baseball to golf, or from golf specifically to long drive, the difference is one equipment. You know, we go to the USGA max limit, which is 48 inches. So all our clubs are the max legal limit that you can go. They're all in the all the heads have to be on the USGA conforming clubs list, so there's nothing illegal about what we hit. But where you see guys on the PGA Tour like Dustin, he's probably hitting a 46-inch driver, where guys on the LDA Tour are hitting a 48-inch driver. So you're going to create a little bit more centrifugal force, a little bit more swing speed in hitting a longer club. The lofts are different, you know, and we just, you know, it's just it's a different swing. It's a different mentality than trying to hit a fairway versus trying to hit a grid.
Is it's kind of been described to me in the past kind of the low point or the kind of the drop point at the bottom out of the swing comes sooner so that you coming on the upswing because you're hitting with something that's maybe 5, 6, 7 degrees as opposed to me, I'm going to hit 9.5, 10.5, maybe someone I know hits 11.5, right?
Right, absolutely. So your average guy, on the WLDA will probably hit a five, anywhere from some hit a 3-degree driver, some guys hit a 6-degree driver, some hit 6.5. It just depends on where they're comfortable at and what's best for their swing. You know, that's another thing why I said you get fitted, you know, because you got to fit stuff around your golf swing. People, they misconstrue it all the time and say, oh, if I get that driver, I'm going to hit it 400 yards. No, what I hit might not be best for you, you know. So everything, the WLDA drivers, they conform to USGA. They have to conform to USGA. They have to be on the USGA conforming list. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But we just get lower lofts where we get lower lofts, let's say a 5-degree, we want to have an angle of attack of, you know, 2 to 3, 4 degrees positive. So we hit up on the ball, create less spin, carry it a little further. So that way we carry the ball further, and when it hits the ground, it also rolls out as well because roll counts.
Yeah.
So whereas most of your amateur golfers that you see will have a negative attack angle on the driver. And you see big high spins, or they hit it and they say, oh, I hit it far, but it's not going anywhere. Well, then you're getting into angle of attack and face angles and all that kind of stuff like that.
Now, how much do you guys use TrackMan or technology like that to help you guys dial in? Are you guys hyper-technical, or is it kind of feel, or somewhere in between?
It's a little bit of both. I think I'm on a team called the One Stop Power Shop. My club builder and swing coach, Bobby Peterson, he has a flight scope, so that's the technology we use. Some people have TrackMan. Some people have their own TrackMan where they use. And we try to make sure that we get, you know, we need to get swing speed numbers. We need to get ball speed numbers. We want, you know, club pass, face angle, you know, angle of attack. We also look at, you know, fall angle. We look at ball spin rates. Things that it can get super technical, you know. And some people can get overwhelmed if they don't know what they're looking at. So luckily, you know, I understand it. I have a swing coach that understands it. So we break it down to where, you know, we try to optimize the best launch, the best, you know, angle of attack, the best ball spin rate. All that goes into effect to try to hit the ball further.
And do you have, like, a particular maybe one or two or three data points that you and your coach harp on to kind of know, if I'm doing these two or three things right, I'm going to be in the zone. I'm going to deliver when I'm on stage at
the
best.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some guys, they will harp on ball speed and swing speed all the time. They will do that all the time. But, you know, let's say a guy swings 150 miles an hour, okay? Let's give you an example. And work with me on my math here. So 150 miles an hour. So a smash factor of 150, okay, means that your ball speed should be 1.5 times your swing speed. So technically, if you swing 150 miles an hour and you have a 150 smash factor, your ball speed should be 225. Well, let's say your smash factor is like 140, okay? Well, that ball speed goes from 225 to 212, 213, 214, something like that, right? Well, now a guy that comes in that swings 145 miles an hour, okay, who swings 5 miles an hour less than the guy that swings 150 but has a 150 smash factor, he's at 217. So now he swings 5 miles an hour slower, but because he hit the ball better and more efficiently, he actually had a faster ball speed than the guy that swung faster than him. So I say that because I don't, you know, people don't need to get hung up so much on ball speed and swing speed. Yes, do you have to have it? Absolutely. You can't come out here and swing 125 and think you're going to compete. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. But the three big things that I look at are launch angle, ball speed, and spin rate. So launch angle or angle of attack, which that plays a part of it. So launch angle, angle of attack, the ball spin, ball speed, and then on it. And the last thing I kind of look at is the fall angle, because a lot of people think, well, what does fall angle mean? So fall angle means the angle of the ball coming down to the ground. So if think of a lawn dart. If you throw a lawn dart and it comes down at an angle of 60 degrees, it just lands and sticks into the ground, right? A ball is the same way. It's still a projectile. So you want it to come in 45 degrees or less is optimal fall angle. So when it hits the ground, it actually takes off and skips and rolls out based on what your spin rate is. So yeah. I've seen guys that have a 33-degree fall angle that only carry the ball 350, but if it rolls 60 yards, they just hit it 410. And I've seen a guy that carries it 390, but he only rolled out 10 yards, and he got beat by 10 yards. He only hit it 400. So there's so many factors that go into it, but those are the things that I really focus on is angle of attack, launch angle, ball spin, and ball speed, and then the last thing would be the fall angle just to make sure that we're hitting efficient golf shots.
All right, last question. So for someone who's listening to this podcast, is like, all right, I'm going to tune in tomorrow. I'm going to watch from Mesquite. I'm going to watch you guys hit the crap out of the golf ball. What if they haven't watched Long Drive before, or maybe they've watched it casually at best, what are like the two or three things that they should watch for so they have a better understanding of what you guys are doing and a better appreciation of what you're doing out there?
One thing they need, you know, people have their favorites, right? Get to know the guys. You know, if you go to the WLDA website, I think it's worldlongdrive.com. If you go there, you can see all the players' profiles. You can see pictures. You can see, you know, interviews, things of that nature, and get to know the guys and really kind of see the background of them, you know. And when you watch it, it'll be live on the Golf Channel on Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right? Clash in the Canyon event. So when you watch it, you know, watch the personality of guys. Watch how they interact with the crowd. Watch how they interact with each other. You know, it's truly something that is unique. It's not golf. Is it golf related? Yes, because we're hitting drivers, we're hitting golf balls. But you know, it's something that's electrifying. I've never had anybody say, "How can I putt better?" They always ask me, "How can I hit it longer?" You know, they always ask me, "How can I hit it longer?" And that's what everybody's looking for. They're looking for more distance. So it's a close group of guys. They're all good guys. They have families. They're just like your everyday person. We just have the ability to absolutely crush golf balls. And you know, somebody who's watching it for the first time, I mean, just sit back and enjoy it. And you know, I hate to say marvel at somebody swinging 150 miles an hour, but there's not a lot of people that do that. There's just not. And you know, that's athletic ability. You know, that very few. I mean, the only thing I can compare it to would probably be Usain Bolt. You know, can somebody outrun Usain Bolt? Probably. Will somebody probably break his record? Who knows, right? But he has God-given speed. He has God-given speed. Whereas everybody in the WLDA, they have God-given swing speed. Can you work to get faster? Absolutely. But these guys have an ability that very few people in the world have, and being on the Golf Channel to showcase that is an absolute blessing, and it's just to open the world's eyes to a whole different aspect of golf, and just sit back and enjoy the ride because it's going to be a fun one.
Landon, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on with us. Best of luck the rest of the couple of days in Mesquite, and hopefully we can talk to you again down the line.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks to Landon again for being on the show. He was a great guy to talk to. Wish him nothing but the best. As you heard him talk about, he has already been competing. It's kind of a two-day competition. You go to the kind of not open qualifying, but basically the qualifying for the match play, which is ultimately what you're going to see on Golf Channel tomorrow night if you tune in for it. Hopefully you do. Or DVR it. Even if you got like 45 minutes to kill during the weekend, I mean, it's a fast event. It's 3 minutes per golfer. Once you get down to what the top eight, they may do 16. I forget if they're doing 16 or 8. But either way, it's 3 minutes per golfer. It doesn't take that long. It takes like 7 minutes a match. So you can be done fast-forwarding-wise very quickly. It doesn't take all that long. So check it out one way or the other. And hopefully you become a fan of long drive like I am. All right, that's going to do it for us on this edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. We'll come back later in the week, hopefully with a guest, talk a little bit about Memorial, U.S. Open qualifying, all kinds of cool things happening as we get ready for the second major of the year. Hit me with a note, Ryan at thegolfnewsnet.com. If you prefer email, follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you listen to us that way. It helps us reach more people, and we always appreciate that opportunity. And we appreciate your company listening to us however it is you listen to us, whether it's on your computer, on your commute, in your car, whatever you're doing. We appreciate you being along for the ride with us. Until next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show, I'm Ryan Ballingy, and we'll see you next time.